start right at zero, and then you're going to hear. Okay, good. I think that's good. Mm-hmm. Welcome, everybody, to the June 20th, 2019 regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. We previously called ourselves to order and had an executive session. So at this point, we are to the Pledge of Allegiance on our agenda. So if everyone will stand up and join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And thank you, Michelle and Heidi, Ms. Klappenbarger and Ms. Leparo, for hosting our meeting tonight. We appreciate it. Right now, I'd accept a motion to adopt our agenda.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next on our agenda, we have a presentation from Bunsold Middle School.
Before I get into our Bunsold presentation tonight, I want to recognize our community partners for this year. I have two of the three. They were kind of worked in a trio this year. It's individuals from the Marysville Public Library. I have Kelly Scott and Christiana Cangelio with us tonight, and Kate McCartney is not with us tonight. They have provided a tremendous resource to us here at Bunsold, but I believe it's also extended to other schools in the district as well here in Marysville. But what they've done for us is they will bring books. Our teachers can go online, and they can sign out resources for their classroom. And Kelly carts them as a courier back and forth as a convenience. Mm-hmm. I know that we hear a lot about, like, one of our classroom teachers, Carrie Cook, just do nothing but rave about that service. And so tonight, I'd like to recognize them as Bunsold Middle School's community partner for the 2018-2019 school year. So I'll just read a little bit what we wrote. Bunsold Middle School would like to thank our community partners for the Marysville Public Library. Kelly Scott, Christiana Cangelio, and Kate McCartney provided books, time, convenience to our teachers throughout the 2018-19 school year. This school and community relationship is an asset to our staff and students. We thank you for your support, and we look forward to our continued partnership in the future. So thank you so much.
Sure.
We appreciate it. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We'd like to shake your hand, too, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much as well. We appreciate it. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
All right, so since it's June and our school year has ended, we thought we would kind of give you a real quick synopsis of the year in review of what our target or focus was this school year. So this year when we started, actually last year at this time in the summertime, we started thinking about what is it and what is our next step that we need to do. First of all, I will tell you that there's never you're finished. There's always something more to do above and beyond even where we're currently at right now. So our focus this year was making some serious instructional and intentional shifts so that we could meet our learners where our learners were and make it an experience for them so that they understood how they could reach their goals, and we could fill in gaps if gaps existed, and what that looked like in the classroom by creating an engaging classroom, providing opportunities or other coursework that might not have been in a traditional type setting. So what we thought we would talk tonight a little bit about is about some of those instructional shifts that were made. You're going to see some pictures of students in here, and you're going to see what doesn't look like a traditional classroom. You're going to see students sitting in non-traditional ways or using information and data to put together intentionally students in groups. And we'll talk a little bit about that and kind of walk you through. Now, we couldn't possibly, I would have loved to give you a lot more, but if we did that, we would probably be here like through tonight and tomorrow morning. So it's my pleasure to showcase a little bit about what we did this year at Munsell Middle School. With that being said, you look up here and you see these are our 7th grade students. This is our pride wall. And while although we're recognizing them in this case for their contribution to the habits of mind in our camp, our collaboration, acceptance, mindful, and persistence in terms of that, the thing that resonates with me as I sit and I look at that is you see a variety of different sizes. You see not just that, but outside of their physical appearances, what you also see is different interests, likes, ways that they like to and prefer to learn. And that became our focus this year as we started with how can we reach these kids, every one of them and their uniqueness about them, so that we can create a positive experience for them in their learning journey as we move through this. So what I love about middle school, I will tell you, you know, they're all, beautiful and exciting and all of that there, and sometimes they present challenges to us, but I love middle schoolers, and it's those challenges that makes me happy to be able to be here at Munsell Middle School, because you never know when you walk in the morning which one of those you're going to get or what you're going to experience, but that's what the cool part of it is. Where they're at, I think about my time in terms of middle school, where they're at, and they're kind of, you know, some of them are at the awkward stage, they're trying to be independent, but they need to be dependent, and they're trying to figure out who they are and kind of where they fit in the world. And to me, it's such a pivotal age in their development. And I think we have a tremendous opportunity in front of us every day that I walk in the building to change someone's course as a relationship, hopefully because they encountered me or one of our teachers or another staff member in the building. So it makes me happy, and I love middle school. I still am in middle school.
Just to go off of the picture, you know, Michelle referenced it. All of them look different, right? And that's one of my favorite things about middle school is we can stand in the hallway and look down, and there's a boy that's this tall standing next to a boy that's this tall standing next to a boy that's this tall, and they're all walking together. And to me, I think that uniqueness in all of them, I think we as a district have embraced that, and we have our PLPs, it's our personal learning profile, so our students fill out that information. And then right away, teachers get to know our students because of that PLP data, whereas it might take years, months, to get to know that information from students traditionally, but because our students fill this out on the front end, I feel like we know what their likes and interests and dislikes are, and who's a teacher that they connected with or a staff member that they've connected with in the past. So we know all of that going into every school year, which is amazing data to have. Where we have used that is teachers now implement things in their classroom based on this PLP data. It's based on a lot of other data, too. But our World Studies classes this year, they always do a salon project. It's about the Renaissance. And so they have different Renaissance thinkers, and they talk about all of these Renaissance thinkers. But this year what they did is they used that PLP data, and they took, like, personality traits from the students and linked them to a Renaissance person that was a similar personality, and they said it was the best that it ever went. So they're utilizing that data to be intentional about their instruction, which I think is amazing.
So I mentioned at the onset that we were at the beginning of bringing some additional coursework that is what one might see as a non-traditional. This is one of them that came to us this year, and it was provided to us through our partnership with Ohio High Point. Ohio High Point granted us the opportunity to have an additional Ohio High Point satellite program here. And it's been kind of a vision of mine for quite some time as we continue to expand those programs. This course is a medical detectives course, and it's a forensic science course, if you will. And they look, and as you can see here, they're growing bacteria, they're looking at information about the bacteria, making decisions about it. One of the coolest things that happened is our teacher this year took our 8th grade students on a field trip and ended up in a cadaver lab, where they were actually speaking, they weren't speaking back and forth, but had the ability to ask questions, where there was someone that was there doing and had done an autopsy, and the kids had to try to work through and figure out whom or what happened to this person. which again is a learning experience that is, I mean, it's right there. This was a course that there were a lot of students that were interested in participating in this. We offered it this past year in grades 7 and 8, and it was well received. And that all generated as conversations that happened between me and the folks from High Point. So this particular teacher does the medical detectives part-time and then also works with some of our at-risk students through the career connections or the career-based intervention programs as well. So we were able to grab another teacher from Ohio High Point, and it has been an awesome experience. You hear the kids talk about it all the time. So I'm excited to have that new course this year and can't wait to see what happens next year and the year after that as he then continues to expand on that coursework as well. Again, I mentioned that you're going to see students in non-traditional settings learning about content. So this is, these students are preparing for a debate. You notice the hula hoops on the ground, and what they're doing is using the hula hoops as a Venn diagram to look for similarities and differences, and or in connection with Greece and Rome. And that's what's happening there, and they're collaborating groups because they're getting ready for a debate. And they had been given different items that they needed to go in and to learn about and then to prepare for a debate in their classroom at a later date. So again, non-traditional setting, but what you see is kids on the floor, but you also see kids sitting at desks. So all of this is happening in the classroom in a single moment. Different, at least in my experience, when I was learning. So what you see, or what we've seen in our shift and transition is high student engagement. Students are doing the thinking. Students are the ones that are doing the learning. And then the teacher then has shifted that role and become more of a facilitator, right? Instead of being the one that's giving the knowledge and information. And you see a much deeper learning and richer learning environment for our kids.
This was an 8th grade English class, and they had read The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. And this teacher actually used iReady data to group kids. Some were jurors, some were witnesses, and they actually had their mock trial based on the information that they had read about. And then if you flip one more, the students actually created the rubric that they were going to be using to get their assessment grade on as well, which I thought was really ingenious because there was so much buy-in. The students, I mean, they created it, so they knew what to expect. If you were a juror, this is what you needed to do to get your, you know, mastery or your A or whatever it was that they just called them for. But it was amazing that they created it. So I think that's the shift that we're seeing. It's a lot more student engagement now. It's not just all, well, this is what we're doing today.
When you walked by the room at times when that was going on, you could see some pretty intense debates going on in that trial between the attorneys.
Mm-hmm. They took it very seriously. And I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about our arts program as well. We have amazing talent. Isn't that cool, right? Amazing talent in this building. And so the fact that we can have kids that can express themselves artistically, musically, within our building, I mean, how can you not be proud of that as well? So we just wanted to share some stuff as well.
So behind all of this in the background, we have a wealth of information about our learners, their academic performance. You heard Heidi talk about the PLP and the personalized learning profile, not to mention the relationships that are cultivated between the classroom teacher and all of us, actually the adults that interact with the students on a daily basis. But we also have a lot of rich data about where they are in their learning journey. So one of the things that we did this year that has really helped to also shift our instructional practice is to really focus on a data culture and to utilize that data and information to drive the instruction that happens in the classroom on the back end, so that we are not delivering instruction the same for every student, but we're hitting students where it best serves their needs. So what this is just simply an example of some of the data that we do. This is a diagnostic assessment. We do the diagnostic assessment 3 times a year. And then once we have that diagnostic assessment for the learners, then we work to create opportunities for kids to get additional support if they need it. this is an example of a new class that we created this year where that is exactly what's happening. We took learners who were struggling at reading, and we asked or had them placed into a course in addition to their language arts course based on the data that we had, and really focused on just what they needed to help them become better readers. The other thing that we committed to with this is we committed to a very small class size. And what I mean by that is 10, 8, somewhere very small, so that you can get individual with these students. Here's the other part that we didn't expect to happen. So the kids are flexible, so they're in and they're out. So some of our learners met their goals at the end of a particular time period, right? However, students were coming to us saying, can I just stay? And the reason they wanted to just stay, for them, it gave them hope. It gave them, felt successful in that process, and they wanted to remain in that course. Now, how did they get, so what happened is we didn't pull them at any core class for that to occur, but instead they had to give up one of the other unified arts or related arts courses. So it was a 52-minute class, same as our other classes were, and we had kids wanting to stay in there all year long, even though they had reached their mark, because it made them feel safe and supported and a sense of hope. So that was when I don't know that I expected it, and kids then articulated it to us. Mm-hmm. Of course, it went the other way, too. There were some who was like, okay, I'm done. I'm good. so it went both ways. But it was, and as we continue to expand this, we have some thoughts this year about how we can even make it better than it was this year. So this was a new thing for us this past year. Again, looking at data, trying to meet learners where they're at, changing our instructional shifts and practices. So the other thing that we did is we looked at the diagnostic data, and this happens to be not from a diagnostic but more in a standards mastery approach. So what you're looking at is you're looking at a pre and a post assessment. So the green are students in the pre-assessment that had already met mastery. So what that meant was that they already were where they needed to be on the learning target, so that as a classroom teacher you can say, okay, these kids, these students in this group, I can extend, I can push, I can challenge, I can do something fundamentally different, right? And then the students in the yellow were not quite yet there, but were moving. And then the students in the red had not, on a pre-assessment, not been where they need to be. The cool part about this is look at the growth from that's the pre, that's the post. So again, something fundamentally different that we use to help reach our learners and drive our instructional practices that were happening in Tier 1 instruction. So this is in a regular, this happens to be a math class, within Tier instruction. So when we changed and shifted our learning practices, you saw multiple things happening in the classroom at the same time. The learners were all at different places because that's what they needed, being driven off of this data. So the data culture and the shift in that has helped us make better informed decisions about our learners as we continue our journey in making sure that we meet them where they're at.
And I think it's important to note that it's not Michelle and I driving the data talks. You know, the teachers are doing that within their teams and departments and things like that, which the fact that we can back off of that, that they know how to do it and know what to look for, that's been a shift over the last couple years, but this year it really took hold and they, like every team, did it themselves, which was really cool to see.
We were present. We found that they really did it.
They did it. Which
is and they got it right. And then what happens if learners aren't placed in an intervention? They get an opportunity then to be placed in an enrichment. These are ungraded courses. You can see Project Wild, Discover STEM, Microscope Mania. All of this is happening. It happens Monday through Thursday. Yeah, Young MC was one of my favorites this year. So we had a classroom teacher that was passionate about rapping.
He's amazing.
And so what happened is students, he would help them write raps, and they actually wrote two raps. One centered around
our camp motto, which was really cool.
And then they perform. They actually perform for our students. So we carve out a little bit of time and let them rap for everybody else. And they loved it. So a variety of different things just happened, whether it be intervention to the enrichment, tier one instruction, all of those things is kind of what I wanted to be able to showcase tonight, to show you kind of how we're reaching them in ways maybe that obviously are non-traditional. So, as I mentioned at the beginning, we are clearly not where we need to be. We saw those kids in the math, and they were still some in red. So we're still not okay with where that leads us to. There's still much more work to be done. Patty and I are already deep into the weeds of what that's going to look like for us next year as we begin to think about where is our next step in this process. That's kind of possible this past year in a real quick snapshot through our year.
Questions, comments?
I've got one on the PL2 back. The kids are changing, they're growing. You collect that data at the beginning of the year. Do the students have any opportunity as the year goes on to go in, update, or say, I thought I was like this, but I really found I'm now like this?
Yes, they do. And then they do it also at the beginning of every year. So they'll do it again this year. Mm-hmm. Another thing that one of our teams did last year, maybe the year before, is like it shows you like who's a kinesthetic learner or a tactile learner or that kind of thing. And we had one team that made like a little hand if you were a tactile learner and an ear if you were auditory. And then they have the kids take them on like the little symbol on their Chromebook, just so when their Chromebook was open, teachers can see what was in their classroom. Like they just have used that data in such amazing ways. But yes, they do have the opportunity to update that.
I was thinking about their PLPs, right? That's what they're called.
Yep.
So I think we had a presentation sometime this year where it sounded like a lot of the students felt more connected to their teacher and they felt more hoped about the coming year. And there were a number of like really positive kind of emotional or psychological. And I was wondering if that helps with people besides their teacher, like you as administrators, do you connect more with the students or do the other students get to know each other better as well? Or is it mainly a tool that the classroom teacher has?
We have access to it as well. I think other students wouldn't have access to other students' information. But I think oftentimes it allows us the opportunity and team teachers the opportunity to craft relationships between peers and peers. Does that make sense? Sometimes that is because they place them in collaborative groups together where they see some similar interests, and sometimes out of that, new friendships are created, new relationships are created based upon peers. Does that help answer your question? As far as us, oftentimes for us, we spend a lot of time in conversations with the academic team teachers, trying to, like, when I'm working with an individual student, let's say in my office or wherever else, trying to look at the root cause, because we recognize that sometimes the behaviors that we see exhibited are a manifest of something much deeper than that, and then we have to dig a little bit deeper below the surface to find out how we can tap into that so that we can then try to build a relationship between that student and us, too, as administrators. So I would say I use it that way more than I would collectively, as a whole. But we do have access to it, yes.
So now that you've been trying some of these things for how long, a year or two, or is it longer already?
It's been longer.
Do you feel in the building that the culture has shifted? You talked about when you walk in the building every day, both of you seem to be very happy to be here. I was just kind of wondering if you feel like the culture of the building is shifting after these kinds of...
I think the answer to that question is yes. No doubt. In the sense that I think our kids believe their teachers believe in them. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I think that is generated and fostered out of that intentionality to cultivate those relationships and then to get to know them not just as a student in the classroom, but as humans, mm-hmm. as middle school humans, right? Mm-hmm. And so I spend a lot more time in conversation. Like, I know a lot of things about them as a relationship of just the amount of time that I spend with them, wherever that may could be, in the hallway. mm-hmm. wherever it may be, or sometimes in the office, sometimes in the classroom, sometimes at lunch, and I sit down beside them in the cafeteria at a cafeteria table, which happens often. I'm not quite sure they appreciated that. It's probably not very cool to be sitting at a lunch table with their principal, but
we may get cool.
Usually they don't push back too bad.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about the small group reading intervention and the students that kind of wanted to stay in that group. Is, do you think that the availability of those groups created kind of a separate peer group for those students to kind of stick together, stay together, support each other? Is that maybe why they wanted to stay?
I don't know if it had so much to do with the peer group other than the fact that they were in a group that intentionally provided that support for them, and I think that they felt okay and safe to be transparent and to say, you know what, I'm not real good at this, but I'm in a place that I can get better. And I think because they were placed with peers that also were struggling in that, I think that too helped to cultivate an opportunity for them to be more open to moving forward. That would be my take on it. I don't know that it necessarily created potentially any new friend groups as a result, but I think it became a safe place in there. I know there were a couple of times that I would just go in to the classroom and start talking about that, and you could tell that they were very comfortable with each other, but take them and place them in a classroom where they didn't feel comfortable.
You might not ever hear anything out of them
right.
in that classroom, but then you can go in.
Yeah, because last year you guys presented on the peer tutoring project that you guys had done, and that you had a lot of success with kind of matching up people that weren't necessarily part of the same peer groups to try and build those cross-group friendships.
Hopefully I answered your question.
Yeah. I kind of related to that from that special class. What's the plan for transitioning to next year? So was that a seventh grade class?
Both. Yeah,
okay, or both? Okay,
yeah. We have our students
okay.
In those classes, and it's data-based. We work with Kristen Jones and Kim Jones pretty closely to figure out who needs to be placed where. And again, like I said, it's data-based. But they, like Michelle had mentioned, they have an opportunity to be in, and then if they meet goals, then they have the opportunity to be out as well. It's so nice to be able to fill those gaps. Some of them are here with significant gaps. And the fact that we have something like this that can provide that support, it's so much better to provide that support now than to be in 10th grade and still be at that level and not be able to read real well.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Okay. I also was kind of curious about that, the student-created rubric.
Mm-hmm.
So I know a lot of times when you're talking mastery learning and retaking tests, some people might question, is it making it too easy for kids? So when they created this rubric, did the teacher feel like the rubric was similar to what she or he would have created, or easier or harder?
I think she did.
Okay.
And she said she was so impressed, and her curriculum coach also was a part of all of that as well. She was the judge, actually.
Okay.
During the trial that day, but best it's ever been. I think it's that investment, it's that buy-in, and so it wasn't like kids come up with this and then we're going to do whatever you say. They really thought about what would be. What would show mastery of this, and what would not? So I think it's giving them that ownership is really what makes it
probably a little pride.
We
created this, and it's not something that's just, piece of cake or anything that. So, great. Any other questions, comments?
No, I would just say good for you. We know that two things really impact student success the older they get: trauma and their ability to read. And this building has attacked both of those issues head on. And the fact that you're actually teaching reading at a middle school level doesn't happen everywhere. Once we get into an English class at the upper grades, we lose that reading instruction. Doesn't mean kids don't need it. And so the fact that you found an opportunity to provide that for kids, and the fact that kids who have probably failed at reading for the past several years want to stay there and get better, just speaks to the quality of instruction, the success that they're seeing, and good for you for taking on that challenge. That is a life changing experience that we need to heavily invest in. So good for you. Mm-hmm.
And I just one other comment was, you make it seem so easy, but when you look at all those different classes going on and the small class, I'm sure that has to be a nightmare for you, like with your staff, to try and figure out how to fill these classrooms and make sure that the kids are all, you know, getting what they need. So I know you've always been very creative, and every year you change your schedule and you know, we don't take it for granted. We don't take it for granted. I know there's a lot of work that goes into that. So,
we're fortunate too to have staff to do it with us. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'll get the deer in the headlights, like, really, you want me to? And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And sometimes the other part of that is, I think, that makes us so successful in that respect is, not only is it when the ask is made, it's they produce that ask and then something much more than I didn't even expect, because of them as a staff being empowered to be able to take it to that next step. And I don't know, we're very, very lucky here to have such a good staff that is willing to do that. Sometimes not always, so sometimes there's a little bit of pushback, but the productive pushback is okay, because it also has the ability to help push me outside and make Heidi and I think differently as well. And I appreciate their expertise that we're in this together, I guess, collectively as a whole.
And they're so student focused, too, that even when people might ask something and they say, they're like, it's good for kids, we're rolling. So,
good job. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda, we are going to have a presentation from Miss Ashley Thompson on our new trade cards.
As you know, you have a policy later in the agenda talking about grading. So
right.
Ashley wanted Ashley to come here and share some of the work that's been going on in parent engagement around our transition to new report cards cases.
All right.
So as you know, we've been embarking on mastery learning and trying to take a look at our standards and do some standards-based alignment in District K-12. But K-6 is really ready for a shift in the grade card. So I'm going to just talk a little bit about what that looks like. Obviously, standards-based grade cards aren't necessarily a new innovative thing, but pairing that with the mastery reporting is. So I'm going to talk about what were the goals and why are we embarking on this change. Really, as teachers started to take a look at the prioritized standards and report mastery to parents, they found themselves creating their own documentation to give parents sort of a window into the classroom and into the instruction. So we really wanted to take a pause and say, how can we encourage clarity and transparency that isn't creating more work for the teacher? How do we strengthen school-to-home partnerships to give parents a window into the instructional model so they can get really specific feedback on how their students are doing as they work toward mastery on what we call the critical learning targets? How do we continue enhancing equitable grading practices and make sure that grades mean what they intend to mean? So how a student's learning on their trajectory toward mastery of each Ohio standard? And then how do we personalize that reporting so it's really meaningful for that student and family viewing the grade card? So these are really our goals, and as we reviewed the goals, we realized there were some deficiencies in our current model that weren't allowing us to do exactly this, so we talked through how do we enhance our grade card to make it match what our goals are on behalf of our students and our families. So the current grade card has what we would call critical descriptors within each grade level and content area. So there are about between 5 and 10 descriptors under reading at fourth grade or math at fourth grade. Not necessarily exactly the language used in the Ohio Learning Standards. And they were typically content area based. So even in preview, they were reporting out at the content level. You got an A in English or you got a B in math. K-4 schools, K-4 classes had habits of mind reported on the grade card.
And then I'll show you a picture of an image here. We really used varying scales. So depending on what content or what grade level a parent was looking at, you might see A, B, C, D, F, you might see OSU, you might see 1 through 4. So you really had to be very cognizant of what you were looking at, what scale went with that content area, and so forth. And I'll show you a picture of that. And those scales were really dependent on, like I said, the grade level and the content area. And at the K-6 level, we published grade cards at the trimester. So that's sort of where we are now currently. And this is just a view of what the scales were depending on which area you were looking at. So these are the characteristics. There were some OSUs used in academic areas. In certain grades, they use ABCDF. So you can see for a parent, that's a little bit cumbersome to try to figure out which scale goes with which course or which content area. In addition, this, you can't really read it, but these are the descriptors under each content area. So as we took a look at the Ohio Learning Standards and what we were prioritizing as critical, we created what we think is a draft that helps meet the four goals. So I'll let you take one and pass it down. And again, this is just a draft that we worked through Power School to create. And I'll just walk you through the changes that we are, it's more than an enhancement or an upgrade. But the academic feedback on the proposal is actual standards that are deemed critical that we prioritize with groups of teachers who you've heard about the continuum builds and identifying which targets are most critical at each target level in each content area. And then the teachers work together over the course of last year to vertically align and then create progressions for each learning target. So there's been a ton of teacher work and time put into what targets are priorities at each level. And again, you're looking at a fourth grade sample, I think.
Could you explain what a progression is?
Sure. So when we talk about a critical learning target, that's an Ohio Learning Standard. So for instance, maybe you're looking at standard numbers in base 10, and the standard is written. That's the grade level expectation for that standard. What we wanted to do to take a personalized approach to that is work with the teachers to calibrate. What does that expectation really mean? Are we working off assumptions or interpretations that are different of that target? So the teachers work together to say, what are the fundamental steps that kids need to have in order to meet that expectation? And are we all talking about mastery of that expectation in the same way? That is really powerful conversation. And the teachers were amazing as they worked through that. And there were debates and, you know, everyone has different passions around what that means, but really just looking at what those steps are. I call it kind of the ladder of learning. So what are the prerequisite steps and so forth up to that mastery level of the expectation of the learning target for that level. Mm-hmm. So when you look at those standards on the grade card, teachers have access to what that work was to build a progression and calibrate mastery. And then kids will in turn have access to that. The non-academic feedback is we're just sticking with the habits of successful learners, and we're adding K-6 to that reporting feature. It was just a K-4 feature. We are eliminating the multiple scales and just going with one scale. So I'm going to give you, see it on there, it's a mastery scale, M plus, M, A, N, N, Y. But I'm going to give you a definition of what each of those mean. So you can kind of understand what that key is. So we decided that kind of unanimously it was best for everyone that we just hone into one scale so parents and students were having to sort of navigate multiple scales. We call this the proficiency scale, which has the mastery language there, as you can see. And then we will keep the time frames the same, so we'll still report it each trimester, and CQ is in a live reporting system now, and that will continue as well, so parents have ongoing immediate access to how students are doing on all those components. The difference for CQ is they won't ever bundle into a full letter grade at the end of the course. Parents will have ongoing access to how students are doing at each standard level. I think it's important to note a couple things about the proficiency scale. We've talked to the teachers through the progression building and through the calibration of mastery, that really the target of each standard is mastery. So the goal for kids is mastery, but you heard Michelle talk about when kids show mastery, what is our responsibility in our commitment to kids at that point? And we really want to take advantage of standards that have what we call stretch, where you could possibly go beyond the expectation. We want to give kids every opportunity to think creatively and innovatively and stretch beyond the expectation if they're at mastery. Likewise, if they're not at mastery, what is our responsibility to kids when they're approaching or not yet at mastery? So we think that it opens up really transparent conversations about how kids are doing on each learning project. And that scale here sort of describes what those actions are. You'll see did not attempt at the bottom and not assessed, because there will be targets throughout the year that aren't taught assessed at that time. So we wanted to give parents that feedback as well, so they weren't wondering, you know, why is that target blank or why is that standard not having a reporting feature on it. So you have the sample from fourth grade. With the scale on the right and then the standards on at the bottom. By content area, you can see it's a couple pages long. Our old grade card was also a couple pages long, but this is a tiny bit longer because we've added habits and we've added targets to each content area. So it is a little bit more robust and descriptive. And we landed here through a lot of collaborative conversation, which included the audience that was of most interest, and that was our parents. So in April, when we decided we have a tool, Power School, that can take this on, we did meet with a small group of parents, and we had a focus group meeting, which each building brought about 1 to 2 parent representatives to just have an early look at, do you find this helpful? What information do you want from your grade card? How do you want it organized? What's best for you? Because you're the audience that we're hearing about, and this is really hopefully a tool that helps us have better communication and strengthen our partnership with you. So they gave really great feedback and were helpful in the design of the first proposal that went to our second parent group. So each building had an open house. And overall, about 75 parents attended in collectively. And then they gave an additional feedback to us, which helped further tune where we landed tonight. And in addition to that, principals have focus groups in each of the buildings that were inclusive of teachers. And then teachers being input. And I'll give you an overview of what those outcomes were. The strengths that were sort of unanimous was, you know, they liked the clear connection to instruction. They liked that there wasn't a need for, you know, explaining, well, this is what this descriptor means. They liked that it was the standard language. And one stakeholder said it really mirrors the vertical targets, and they appreciated that. They thought it promoted clear criteria for learning rather than blending into an overall score, which is more specific to student learning. They liked the detail, and they loved the consistency in the scale. Those parents were saying it was really hard to know, you know, they got it, but it was harder to know which scale went with which grade level and which content area. Some adaptations and concerns that we took into account were the comment box. So you can see the comment box on that draft is at the bottom of the grade card. Moving into next year, parents really wanted content or comment boxes by content area. So if there's a not yet, for instance, on a target in English or reading, a teacher can put that comment right there, and parents are having to go to the back of the grade card. So that's a change that we're looking to make. They wanted to include more detail in the scale, so we provided the scale, and they want some of the bold detail that's on this colored page to be on the grade card itself. So that's a change that we're going to make. They did want us to indicate which standards are not taught yet, so that's where the NA was born, not assessed at this time. They wanted a specific order of items on the grade card, so they liked that reading and math came first, then science and social studies, because parents at earlier levels want their kids to read and be able to do math, so they wanted that to the top of the grade card. And just some things like that helped us put the grade card in the order. They were curious, you know, when you're going to start communicating with them and helping them access this new grade card. So we have communication plans rolled out for August that principals are working right now with here through the summer to create. And we'll have video access, parent meetings, all kinds of different avenues for people to access the new grade card. And another concern that came out of some parent focus groups were, will our students be ready to transition to Bunzl if this is the way that, that learning is reported at K-6? And that's something that I've been meeting with training Michelle about, to just really bridge, you know, how does mastery learning look in K-6? How can it look at Bunzl? And then how are they going to be prepared for high school when the stakes are even higher? So those things are all taken into account. We really appreciated the parents, you know, insights into that. And again, like, I'm never surprised by this, but it's just good to get in touch with parents to say, what are your priorities? You know, how can we help strengthen our partnership with you? And they were very receptive to that. So I hope that those meetings continue to be well attended and full of good feedback, because we can certainly make those adjustments. So that's kind of an overview. Do you have any questions?
On the standing on your right, it says produce complete sentences, recognizes correct and appropriate fragments in life. And so, first trimester, I do okay. So, I might get a AM approaching mastery, and then I would also get a number. So, it would be AM 3.
No, it would just be the AM at the learning level. So on the academic standards, they would just use the mastery scale.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Good job.
All right.
The characteristics only go with the learning habits at the end.
Correct.
Okay,
so,
yeah, on the third page.
Follows directions, organization, that's where you get the number rating.
Okay, all right. So,
okay. This might sound like a silly question, but I'm thinking of conversations I've had with people in the community. One of the things they say is there's not going to be grades anymore. So is this a grade card? I mean, you called it a grade card, but also here it says standards-based reporting. So are these grades?
Yeah, so we look at it as the measure of learning. And so it's basically where the student is, and we like, one thing we talk about repeatedly with teachers and with one another is, you know, what's the best way for us to give kids the information that they need and parents the information that they need about each critical learning target to measure where they are? And so when we looked back at the mastery scale a while ago, we took the research and we realized, you know, students need to know where they are according to that target, not necessarily averaging it all together into a grade that, especially at the K-6 level, that was just this overall grade that wasn't, that lost meaning the moment you average things together. So yes, it's a measure of where they are in their learning. We call it a report card, a grade card, yes.
Okay, right, so if I'm talking to somebody about all the new learning approaches and they say, well, there aren't grades, I could just say, yes, there are grades.
Yeah, it's just a mastery scale.
I mean, one of the things that I think people are thinking when they think about grades is they're thinking back, you know, we either had an A, B, C, D, or F. Mm-hmm. And you knew that other kids had straight A's, some had straight B's, some had C's. And there was a whole, like, sort of competitive aspect to grading. Is that gone? Is that
in the fundamental stages of K-6? We want kids to understand, you know, these are fundamental pieces of information and skills you need to develop in order to go into the next phase in your education and beyond. So at 7-12, they still convert to letter grades. So letter grades are in the traditional sense are still there. But in K-6, we wanted them to just have really individual information about where they are in their learning, uh-huh. So that the focus was on really continuing to make progress in adequate ways and meaningful ways to mastery of these skills that are really fundamental to them. Yeah.
So I'm going to see in writing that I am approaching mastery in three areas. Mm-hmm. I've mastered one, and I have not been assessed in two because we haven't gotten two.
Yeah, there might be
and
some.
And so, rather than getting a C, it says I'm here, I'm going to get that close to understanding a couple of things. I understand something, and I got a couple of things yet that I haven't had an opportunity to learn.
Yeah, and I think the important part about mastery is the commitment from the teacher as well. So when you talk about approaching mastery, that's not only a transparent view of where a kid is on their trajectory toward mastery of that target, is also a commitment from us to say, faster. So if it's on the report card for the end of the school year, they'll have every opportunity to get mastery, and they won't be given up on. There'll be systematic supports in place to allow for them to get to that, to that mastery, that expectation. Yes.
So if I'm approaching mastery on producing a complete sentence, and I don't hit it the first trimester, I might get it.
Absolutely.
In
your first trimester score is just a snapshot in time. It doesn't necessarily influence what your second trimester score might be.
Yes.
So are each standard evaluated at each trimester?
Not necessarily. So especially in the first trimester, not all standards will be taught and assessed. So that will be where an NA would be present. Also, depending on you as a student, if you've mastered certain standards in trimester one, you may not reassess on that because it was mastered. Where a student with an AM will get opportunities to reassess in the second trimester. They might have they might move from an AM to an M second trimester, where another student who had M would just have that M carry forward.
So then when the stretch activities then come into play, how would that be noted?
So if a student has engaged in stretch or extension, that would be where the M plus comes in. So not only have they achieved mastery of that standard, but they've exceeded the expectation. They've done something to apply their learning at greater levels, and that's where an M plus would come in.
So the focus is on personalized learning. Deliver instruction to individual students. And so this report card is designed to give individual report to that student as to where they stand, kind of independent of all other.
Yeah, it removes the competitive nature, and it really just helps us focus on kids and where they are against the standards themselves, not necessarily against others in their classes.
I would think as a parent it would be wonderful to just have that one scale,
yeah,
versus the ABC, the OSUs, the 1, 2, 3, 4s. So, a lot of work went into this. I love the fact that you included the parents,
yeah,
staff, you know, kind of started small. And
yeah,
so
we also heard from parents that a lot of times they don't know what they can do to help. So
yeah,
when they could see things like giving examples or
mm-hmm,
things like that, that they were things that they could do at home to help focus on that. It seemed to be a more clear articulation of what a student was struggling with,
yeah,
or it might need some more reinforcement with at home.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm a parent, my kids are a little bit past this age. But who knows, I may have more kids next year. Weird things happen. If I see a bunch of AMs, am I supposed to be worried, or is it just like, well, they'll have M by the end of the school year?
Yeah, so we're creating ancillary documents to go with it at first as we get parents acclimated to the new structure.
Mm-hmm.
And we're creating things to say, like, if your student has an approaching mastery at this point, just keep reinforcing the material. Here are some practice items, you know, not to be worried. You should be worried if you see a not yet at this point in the year. For instance, trimester two, if it's had two rounds of assessment, we're creating that documentation for parents. And I, from a mom's standpoint, with my own children who are embarking on this part of their educational journey, you know, I have one of my children has more struggles with reading and letter identification, that kind of thing. And so when I'm considering him and his report card, I want to know what areas is he deficient in and where is he having strengths. And I think something like this would help me as a parent say, all right, I really know now I need to work on letter ID, while he's got maybe, you know, sounds are fine, he just doesn't always point out the right letter. So I think it equips parents with maybe not even what to do, but the right questions to ask, and to really dig deeper into where is my child, what can I do to help, and what can I expect in the future for him or her, whether they're right on target or below or above. So we hope that it does that.
I know we were given a reading assignment some months ago.
Right.
And part of what they talked about was moving away from grades being assigned to a process that you turned in 10 of the 10 homework assignments that you did in A for homework. Mm-hmm. And move, because that doesn't necessarily indicate learning.
Mastery.
All right. And so when we move away from that, it makes sense to me that you would have to have some different way of trying to identify where the student is, focused on the learning, and not so much on the process.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, when you walk into classrooms, and I know you do, and you hear kids talking about their own learning in this way, it's terminology that they can really internalize. Mm-hmm. I'm approaching mastery, so I know what to do next. First, like a C, well, you know, what do I do, or a 3. So even mm-hmm. the language itself is really intrinsically tied to the learning process, so the kids continue to partner with their teachers. Mm-hmm. So that, even if I was in a first grade classroom and I heard the kids saying, you know, I'm approaching mastery, so I'm going to work at this station, I was like, so good that they were able to yeah. partner with us, and we try to think about developmentally appropriate ways to talk about learning.
Mr. Smith should get an M plus for his reading assignment.
I know.
Yes.
Great comprehension.
I'd say just an M.
I want Diane for my teacher. That was in the book too. Okay. Good. Well, thank you very much, and thanks for spearheading a great collaborative effort. So we'll be excited to hear the results when they start going out next year.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Next up, we have public participation, and we do have two people on here tonight. For those who have not attended a board meeting in the past, the main purpose of our meetings is to go through the business of the district, but we do think that it's important to allow people to share their comments, concerns, whatever, with the board. It's not a time for us to have conversation back and forth, but again, we like to hear that. So, having said that, the first person who has signed up is Ann Daniel. So, Ann, if you would just give us your name and address, and then you will have 3 minutes to address the board, and our trustee treasurer will track your time. And if you're going to go way over, then we can, you know, try and talk later.
Well, I was talking to you earlier, and to Diane, you said I had 3 minutes.
Okay.
And anybody who knows me knows that's a rule. But actually, I'm representing 104 people times 3. My math's always been really good. So that's 6 hours and 14 minutes, and I'm not going to keep you all that long, but out of my 3 minutes, I think I should be able to read their portion of it and then give my own personal.
Well, I'll just say this. Since your name is on the list there, you can give your portion of it, and if other people have comments in there, then they can come and talk at our public participation. Okay, well then, I'm still going to ask you to, let's try and keep it close to 3 minutes, Anna.
I'll read quick.
Thank you.
This petition is directed to the Marysville Exempted School Board of Education to show our feelings against any sort of approval of alcohol being served at the new school stadium or any other property owned by our school system. We, the taxpayers, are the owners of these facilities and wish to voice our concern that this would even be considered. And this was on May 24th, 2019. Was started. We, the undersigned, agree with Ann Daniel's demand that the Marysville Exempted School Board does not approve the serving of alcohol at school functions or any other functions that may rent the facility for any other reason, to include concerts, personal events, and so forth. We believe that our youth should realize that you don't need alcohol to have fun or a good time. We also believe it would be impossible to monitor how much a person had to drink. Okay, there's 104 here. I would have had more, but I fell last week. So I wasn't, you know, able, and my husband pushing me around, he's 81. So that didn't happen. But I will just tell you exactly why. First of all, I will tell you, alcohol has taken 5 members of my immediate family's lives. 5 members of my immediate family were killed by drunk drivers. Now, the drivers were none of them what you want to call these drunks that were, you know, no. That one of them was a state worker in a state vehicle. His wife wanted him to pick him up at the airport, and the son was late coming, so she demanded he come. 3 miles from their home, 2 members killed. My sister, in front of her house, in front of my grandmother's house, and two cousins in their own yards. Someone missed it. Okay, not by someone that was intentionally going out to say, I'm going to get drunk and have a party. Someone made a bad decision. Someone had one too many. We are trying to teach our children that you don't need drugs and you don't need alcohol to boost you up and make you all that you are. And all the work I've seen done here by these school administrators and teachers, they work hard to make the students know that they can do this on their own. They don't need anything else. We're built with that inside of us to do our very best. So my thing is that these people, and yes, I'm the director of the senior center, but I have the youngest person signed here as an 18-year-old that just turned 18 and said, I'm old enough to now sign a petition, and I don't want anybody drinking at the school. You know, that we have enough other problems. Thanks. Then my oldest is 95 years old, and she's still driving to the senior center every single day. And she said, maybe my reflexes aren't quite as good as they used to be, but I'm sure not going to put any alcohol in my body to make it do that. So what I'm saying is that under no consideration should we ever even be talking about the board discussing it without it being made a public decision. This should not be by 6 or 7 or 8 people out of our community that decides that it's okay. We all paid the taxes. We all have that right to say, we don't want this. And that's what I'm hearing. And they're saying, okay, it's taken off the board today. My concern is, had it not been picked up by the Tribune in the minutes of the meeting, it may have been voted on today, and you wouldn't have had this 75-year-old lady here ranting and raving about it. And I'm telling you this, until you've lived in my life, walked a mile in my shoes, you won't know what it is. I am very upset that we see TV, my favorite,
3 minutes.
Selling, okay. My favorite TV shows, Chicago Fire, Chicago Police, Blue Blood, all these guys that we're seeing these wonderful shows on, but guess what? When they finish their round at the firehouse, when they finish their round at the police station, when Tom Selleck has his final, that he's made his statement that the New York Commission is going to be operating this way, he pulls it out of the drawer and he sets up a glass and pours a drink. We don't need our kids to see that. We need to teach them, you have it in yourself to do exactly, use everything that these people are giving you to do and do it on your own. If you get to become 18, 21, or whatever it is, and you want to drink, then you take the responsibility for it.
Thank you, hon. That's good. I think that's a good place to stop there. But thank you very much. And are you going to, can we have a copy of that petition? Or do you want
yes,
me to?
Yes, if you make me a copy of it.
Okay, sure.
I didn't get a chance to.
Sure.
Yes, thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. And next we have Sharon Emmerich. So Sharon, if you would state your name and address.
I'm not sure I can follow that. That's very good. My name is Sharon Emmerich, and I live at 519 Grace Drive, Marysville. I'm not real comfortable doing this, but as I told Ann earlier, I felt a need, and I strongly feel that if I'm going to speak out about something in public, I need to come here and speak out about it to you. Mm-hmm. I just ditto everything she says. Mm-hmm. I just would like to say I would hope you strongly consider not approving this proposal. And I say this because I have heard, and we all know, that a lot of your students, and students everywhere, I have grandchildren in Illinois, and they have the same problem. Not my grandchildren, but the kids they go to school with. Mm-hmm. There's a drinking problem, there's an alcoholism problem, there's a drug abuse It's sad, but it is going on. And it's something you have to deal with. So do you want to set this precedent? Do you want this example? Just like everything Ann said. I know you've heard this example, but it's a good one. Dublin has their 4th of July celebration. It's on the high school grounds. There's no alcohol. You can't even bring it on. And it's very successful. people have a good time, they have fun, and there's no alcohol. I don't think we need this. I don't think we need to set the example. Marysville school system has been good. Marysville school system has been great. And we hope with the right guidance and your taxpayers' support, it'll continue to be that way. So think about, do you really want to start this? The other point I want to make is, I know when I've talked to some people, and I've talked to board members, and they say, you know, Sharon, if we do this, we'll have the insurance, we'll have the waivers, we'll talk to our legal people, we've done this, we've done that, we'll make sure we're covered. I understand that. But you're going to have accidents, and you're going to have accidents whether you have alcohol or not. But if you have alcohol, the percentage or probability is going to go up. And eventually, you will be sued. Now, I know probably if you have your waiver and you have your insurance, you're going to be fine. But you're still going to have to fight that and deal with that in the public eye. And that's still something I think would not look good for the school system. So I just want you to consider, is it really something, an example you want to set or a precedent you want? I had a suggestion made to me, you know. I know you've put this off and you're thinking about it. Have you thought about maybe surveying the public? I know Ann got 100 and some votes and she'd have gotten a whole lot more. I think if you would maybe survey the public, you'd really find out how everybody feels. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. Next on our agenda, we have our High Point report with Savage.
We had a 220 young people graduate from High Point, and they were very enthusiastic moving forward into their future. So it was a great celebration that occurred. Big news at High Point is the capital improvements going on with their facilities. Their budget has been set, the initial designs, which included what everybody wants. Of course, the bid came in extremely high, so I think we've been through that before. There will be a special meeting on July 10th to start reviewing the construction activities and decide what are musts and what are wants with the High Point campus renovation. And then the other big thing going on is evaluation of programs based on workforce need, interest, or student interest, and developing of a marketing plan to help boost student interest in trades that are approaching High Point and other vocational schools about needing workforce. Heating, plumbing, electrical, construction. There's a waiting list. Every kid graduating has a job waiting for them with some pretty significant firms with some good salaries. So marketing plan next on the agenda.
That's it?
Yep.
Thank you. Great. Superintendent report.
All right. I have a few things. Enrollment, we're kind of hanging out in the same spot. We're continuing to monitor. Kindergarten seems to be on the uptick a little bit, so we're watching that. Actually, it's a little lower in Navin, a little higher in Mill Valley, so we're continuing to watch that. I would imagine a increase after the 4th of July holiday is typically when you start to see things gear up for that. Today I shared with all of you a very preliminary report that was inclusive of our report card data. It included fall results and spring results. I really struggled the best way to, to send it. We have several areas of growth. At this point, it's really at the part where school districts are all in trading off kids. So if a kid was in a district for a certain amount of time, he might not count for them. So it goes back to a different school district. The amount of students who may have been at alternative placements. So we're in that cleanup stage. So that's why I want to reinforce the fact that it's preliminary preliminary data as you look through there. So as that continues to morph, I'll be sending that to you. It looks like we may have gained a couple more indicators. Really, about five indicators rely on one or two students that could bump us up over the 80%, so we are a lot closer in some areas. Again, growth data, which is really what we continue to pride ourselves on, won't be out till a little bit later, mm-hmm. but our subgroup data looks good, looks like we'll get an A in that category again, so some preliminary early indications that it'll be a good report card for them. Stadium updates. I apologize before I say this four-letter word, but rain continues to curse us. What it would tell you at this point is we have started to look at alternatives, kind of a plan B if it is not done. This week in particular has been substantial. They have been at the high school stadium in particular working weekends trying to get work done. But I think it's realistic for us to start looking at a plan B, so we are engaged in that conversation. If I were a new athletic director, I might be a little anxious about that. But, we're in it together, so we're figuring that out. We've already talked to Brent, and I know Ryan Walker's been, we've been meeting and talking about that. So, hopefully you were able to see, and yes. If you haven't, I encourage you to drive by. Mm-hmm. Really putting the track in, that track has to cure for 4 weeks, and what that means is no one can walk on it for 4 weeks. So while the football field may have all appearances being complete, we can't use it because you have to walk over the track to get onto the football field. We fully anticipate that will be much more probably into September before that facility is ready. So stay tuned. The high school crew is, what I will say, working diligently. They really want to make that time frame because they also have other jobs they want to get to in the fall. But unfortunately, no different than other people in the community being impacted, that project is definitely being impacted by the rain. So I would say do anti-rain dance, whatever you got. There are some buildings going up at the high school, so if you haven't been by in a while, you could check that out. Certainly the scoreboard is up and has a substantial presence right now before everything else is in. So stay patient, and hopefully we can get some dry weather.
Okay.
I would go ahead and piggyback that the alcohol policy was removed from the agenda this evening. It probably would be appropriate if we wanted to have some conversation on that topic now as opposed to wait, sure. Since it's not in that policy part.
Sure.
I guess I would turn that over to anyone who...
So I understand and I hear what everyone is saying. I'm very anxious for people in the community to share their input. So I thank Anne and Sharon. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that. So I think it is important that we listen to what the community is saying. So I might regret this, but I'm asking the community to speak up about what they think about this. But before they do that, please understand what the policy is. So based on some social media posts recently, there's been some wild things being thrown around. So right now there is no policy whatsoever, so nothing is going to happen as of right now. But let's get some feedback from the community and hear what they have to say. I totally agree with that.
I will say, I agree with you. I think it's important to know, too, kind of what the process is for our policy. You know, so we do the two reads on the policies the first month. Back in May, I don't know, there's probably about 10 or 12, at least that many of them. And so that having that 2-month time frame gives the board a chance to read over them. If they have questions, we can ask Jonathan. Mr. Langhouse co-chairs that policy committee. I know sometimes Dick and Brian have attended some of those policy meetings too. But anyways, it gives us some time to review them, and if there are comments from the community, to listen to those comments as well. But also to try and help educate too, because like Dan was saying, some of those posts, and I don't get on Facebook very much, but Nan had shared one with me, and I think sometimes people do have a tendency to look at headlines and not read all of the detail, what's behind them. So I second that and encourage people to, you know, let's have some good conversations and talk about what that draft policy was even talking about, because I know it was extremely limited and extremely tight in saying if somebody wanted to rent the stadium, then they needed to have a lot of different things. And I guess to back up, when this draft policy came up, I called Ohio School Boards Association because I wanted to know, was this even legal? Because in some states, it's not legal. In Ohio, it is legal to offer to sell alcohol on school property if the local board would approve the policy. The person I talked to said, well, if you were thinking about this, you'd want to make sure that all of these things were in your policy, and everything she read off was in our draft policy plus more things. And she made the comment that, you know, sometimes when you're in a smaller community, your school facilities may be the largest venues, and you know, you have a community organization that wants to do an outside concert or something like that, then it might be their only option. So I think those were some of the things that I knew, and then some other people were concerned that the renting of the facility was to pay for the stadium, and that is not the case, you know. So just making sure that people really understand.
Can you say that last bit again?
Some people were concerned that the whole idea behind the policy was to raise money to pay for the stadium.
Okay.
But
or
that is,
we
yeah.
would get a cut from alcohol sales, and that would not.
That's not the case. Right, right. The only revenue would be the rental of the facility, and that, and yes,
price.
Yeah, which is kind of the standard price to cover our costs, basically.
So, is the impression that there might be alcohol served at events that are actually school district events?
Yes, football games.
And that's not.
Well, we're not even allowed to do that.
That's
if
not
we
even under
to
consideration.
Correct.
Right.
So I want to echo Nan that from my point of view. Of course, I want to know everything that the community is thinking as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my decision. It's the community's decision. The schools belong to the community, period. So please step forward like you did tonight. Find a way to communicate with any of us, mm-hmm. okay? And also, like Nan said, try to see what the policy actually is. The other thing I would add is, from being at these policy meetings, policies change all the time. If we make a decision and we get it wrong, we will change it. As long as people continue talking to us and let us know, oh, you got it wrong. You see what I mean? But we're going to do the best we can to get it right the first time out, but that's not the end of the discussion either.
A couple things. When we started discussing replacing the stadium and building this project, and we commented that this, we hope, would become a community facility, that it would be more than an athletic facility, that it would be a place, and I participated in an eventful video, where we talked about, you know, celebrating successes in our community, the graduations, we have athletic events, but certainly you've got band concerts, other kinds of things. And so my impression has been that while this is a school facility, and there's no doubt or question about that, that it would be different than the stadiums that we have had in the past, in that it would be designed and utilized by the community for lots of different kinds of community events. And so in looking at how our community, from my perspective, has done things, looking at the balloon rally, looking at the Uptown Friday nights, looking at events on the fairgrounds, alcohol is served at the balloon rally. I think the Uptown Friday night had a wine tasting, and somebody asked how much it cost, and the city website said it was $5, and they took credit cards. I know that there are events on the grounds at the fairgrounds where alcohol is served. So, I guess to me, that opened up a discussion about how and what the use of this facility we were creating would be as a community facility. And I really appreciate Ms. Daniels and Sharon coming today and talking. I want to hear what people have to say. Now, I've asked, I think, about a dozen people personally. Just gone up and said, hey, I got a question for you. School board question.
Right.
You're thinking about having alcohol, maybe one event a year at the football stadium concert, or, you know, could be something in the orchestra, could be a rock band, whatever. What do you think? And of the people that I asked, most said, well, I don't have any problem with that. You know, that's fine. Now, what we heard tonight was the other side. There were a couple of letters to the editor. And I think someone in one of the letters mentioned mixed messages. And I think our community as a whole has sent and continues to send kind of mixed messages, because, as pointed out, you're absolutely right. We have issues with drugs and alcohol in our community. Individuals overindulge, get themselves in situations which are tragic at best. But we also, as a community, have events on government properties, public properties, all around town, taxpayer-paid and supported properties, all over the place in which alcohol is served. So I want to hear more. This is, you know, a question that is before us. I went to two meetings, policy meetings, where this was discussed. The first time that the entire board gets this is when it's put on as a first reading. And so all the policies follow that. It's not an unusual thing for us. There was no, it never has been. We've got all sorts of policies, and we're not trying to slip through any policies. But that's the first time that we as a board get it, and at that point, then we have something to think about, something to discuss. And I really do appreciate your input tonight. I hope that we get more. As we move forward with this project, hopefully, as Brian said, we will be able to make a decision that's consistent with what the community wants. Mm-hmm.
And I did also say that because we had that first read of this policy and now we've taken it off, if it would come back, I said I would like to do it as a first read the second time around. You know, just because we had the first read, it's not really my intent to put it on as a second read, you know, in several months and out of the blue, you know, oh, you didn't know it was going to be on as a second read kind of a thing. So that would be my... My recommendation. There could be some things to tweak in there, because I know, I mean, I thought it was a pretty tight policy, but we also talked about the fact of making it clear that if it were an event, it would be outside of the school year. I think, I can't remember if it's clear, you know, just some things like that, some little tweaks as well. So, okay. There's some discussion. That's it for your report. Okay. Treasurer's report.
I think it was last meeting we talked about the House approving their version of the new state biennial budget. Since that time, I believe it was June 11th, the Senate approved their version. Mm-hmm. With the House version, you may remember, we were getting a little bit of additional money, not really as large numbers, but you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. We were hopeful that potentially that Cut Patterson model maybe would have a chance of getting voted in with the Senate. It would appear that the Cut Patterson will not be approved this biennium, but I think there's still a lot of push for that to maybe happen sometime down the road. The version of the state budget that the Senate approved, from the impact on Marysville schools, there's not a whole lot of difference. Which is not necessarily a bad thing. We're not losing any money based on that version. There was some additional money put in for districts that are fast-growing, high-growth districts that are on the cap. That really had no impact on us. So the budget now, that Senate version, is going to now go to the Governor's Committee, and we'll probably know within the next 10 days what will actually happen. But as of right now, it looks like the numbers that we have forecasted are probably going to be relatively close. Also, it was announced that the Bureau of Workers' Compensation is going to be doing a $1 billion give back. I think that's the third time in the last 5 years that's not been in my forecast or in the budget, so that means that should help the budget a little bit next year. I think we're going to get a little over $100,000 of a refund. That'll be coming early next school year, so that was good news. And then also just wanted to point out that our annual booster and PTO best practices meeting will be held on Tuesday, July 9th at 5 o'clock at the board office, and I've sent an email to the boosters and our principals and things to get that information out.
Good.
That's all.
Great, thank you. Board President's report. We had a community coffee this last Saturday. I believe you two were there.
And we didn't have anyone attend.
Okay.
We were actually hoping to have some discussion about the alcohol policy at the community coffee, but we will be taking off July and August because of vacations. But we'll be back in September at the Street Cafe.
Great. Upcoming events, I just noticed on some of the emails that OSBA sends out, they do have a continuing education on Friday, July 19th, which is refocusing your board from conflict to kids workshop. And the only reason it caught my attention, it just kind of sounds like there's some good refresher stuff in there. One's like snapshot of your board role when conflict comes to call, communications and consensus, students in the spotlight. So it's a 10 to 2 event on a Friday, July 19th. So if anybody's interested in that, just something to consider. And then, as always, just the Capitol Conference in November. Then, the only other thing I wanted to talk about is I serve as our student achievement liaison with the Ohio School Boards Association, and so Kim Miller-Smith is the person at Ohio School Boards Association who heads up student achievement. And so she sends out at least monthly emails, and so it's my goal to try and recap the information, kind of similar to what Mr. Smith does with his legislative reports. You can also go to OSBA's website to find a lot of information on the board's role in student achievement. So kind of the high-level overview says that an effective board focuses on vision, accountability, policy, community engagement and public advocacy, and relationships. And, I feel like our board work plan really addresses a lot of these topics, but the OSBA website just includes a lot of helpful resources. This last month she sent some discussion questions on a variety of topics. So, as a school board member, sometimes you're like, things are going well, but you can get some ideas for other questions that we might want to ask Diane or Todd just to get a better understanding of how our district deals with different current issues. So I will look for that in the future. That's my goal. And that's my report. Mr. Smith.
Legislative report for this month. Todd gave a great overview of most everything that I had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Not me.
But. I have been communicating with Daniel as the Senate has been working on this, and he's asked to sit on the Finance Committee. And I included in my report that I sent to you an email, tried to keep it as brief as I could, sending it to him. That gives you a little detail what we talked about. Basically, I urged him not to expand the student voucher program. One of the topics was the Academic Distress Commission, where the state legislature set up a way for school districts, Lorraine and Youngstown, yeah, I think there's one of them in some place. But there's the legislature recognizes that that's not working, and I encourage him to support the actions taken in the House. Senator Lehner, who visited our school a little over a month ago, came up with her own proposal that was more cumbersome and still maintains state support. The House version basically turns it back to the state, or turns it back to the local school boards, but does provide some prescriptive action. And then there's some action on the graduation requirements. And the big stumbling block between the House and the Senate there has to do with culminating student experience. The Senate is basing more on testing, passing Algebra 1, meeting some test standards and so forth. And we know that we have students that, as hard as they try, are never going to be able to pass Algebra 1. It's just going to be difficult. And so the culminating student experience, it's in the House version, allows for kind of a workaround on that. The Senate, I think, in my read, felt that that was a little too wishy-washy and maybe not as meaningful as it should be, and that seems to be where the discussion is centered. There are three bills that are highlighted that were recently introduced. One would require school districts to designate one valedictorian and one salutatorian in each school.
That would simplify our discussion.
Yeah. The Columbus Dispatch had an editorial where they opposed that. And basically their position is leave it to the local school boards to decide what happens. And then there was Senate bills, 143 and 144, both deal with the offense of aggravated bullying and creating it as a third-degree misdemeanor and putting some teeth behind some of the bullying. And so the legislature recognizes that bullying is continuing to be a problem for this type of people. That's my point.
Thank you. I told you that when you mentioned something to me about the bill for the valedictorian, and we were out of town last week. We spent the night in Ironton, Ohio, and there was an editorial. Same thing. It was against the legislation, kind of saying the same thing. But you know, it just needs to be a local decision. But
that bill—that's not going to go anywhere, right?
Who knows?
We'll
find out.
Most of the bills that are introduced don't go anywhere. One of the points that I carry forward is local control. Don't take local decisions away and apply those at the state level. Let the school board decisions reflect the community. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see.
Thank you very much. Okay. Next up, need a motion to approve the draft minutes from both our May 16th regular board meeting and our June 3rd special meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Savage.
Second.
Second by Mr. Luke. Roll call.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, I would entertain a motion to approve the treasurer action items.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith?
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage?
Well, usually I say it's just the usual items, but there's a few items on here that aren't the usual items. For current year appropriations, we have a couple increases in there. One is for the general fund, which is for advances, which I'll mention here in a second. The other is an increase in the permanent improvement fund. That is due to fiscal year projects that are budgeted for fiscal year 20 that are getting started early, as well as the school bus, which was budgeted for fiscal year 20 but was purchased a month ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So that's just basically allocating fiscal year 20 money in fiscal year 19. You'll note that the fiscal year 20, so next year's appropriations, are on there for approval. The general fund appropriations in that fiscal year 20 appropriations are within the five-year forecast number, so nothing out of the ordinary there. We've gotten some of our federal allocations have been posted, and it's not really been good news. They've been relatively significantly reduced compared to last year. I wouldn't say that those are final allocations, but there's been a significant drop in Title I money, and Title IV money, Title IIA money. So that's going to be a little bit of a hit to the district next year. Asking for approval of an invoice for the purchase of the school bus that I just mentioned. As I mentioned, that school bus is already in the budget. The money is available to purchase it, and the board has already approved the purchase of the school bus, but the problem was there wasn't a purchase order created before the invoice came, so this is just for audit purposes so that we've got the timing correct. And then finally, there's approval for two advances of funds. In the past, you might remember approving some transfers where you transfer money from one fund to another. The difference between a transfer and an advance, with an advance, the money has to be repaid. So we're looking to advance money from the general fund to the permanent improvement fund. The reason for that is even though probably at least half of the money that's going to be spent toward the stadium project won't be spent until next year, for audit purposes, we still have to have the money in the fund now to cover the whole project, because the whole project is basically obligated on a purchase order. So that money is just an advance so that the money is there, and then when our TIF revenue and the donation money comes in next year, that advance would be repaid to the general fund. And then also an advance from the general fund to the medical self-insurance fund. That is due to claims have again continued to be above normal. The fund is actually starting to turn around and looking better, but we're not allowed to end the year with a deficit in that fund. So this is just to cover that, and then the hope would be that premiums in the following year would build that fund back up and repay that advance. And you may also note that with both of those advances, I put just a not to exceed. So especially for the self-insurance fund, that was kind of a worst case scenario. I would hope that the number will be much less than that.
So you just kind of wait until the end of the fiscal year and see what the balance is, negative balance.
Yeah, which we're almost there already. Which
I
is
know.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Right. Okay. I had one other question. Oh, yeah, on that Title I money, is that, why do you think there's such a big reduction?
Well, there was no indication given from the state as to why there's a reduction. Usually if there's a reduction, it's just because of the federal budget.
Okay.
And just less money available.
Okay.
Does the Title
I
money come through the Federal Department of Education?
Yes, and it's then sent to the Ohio Department of Education and divvied out to all the schools.
There were some blurbs on the news about possible reduction in those numbers, so Title I, Title II.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Nope. All right, roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And next, I'll take a motion to approve the superintendent items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Savage.
Second.
Second by Mr. Luke.
There's a list of things in there.
There are.
Each of our items. Also, recommendation to hire the new athletic director, which, if you vote yes, we'll allow him to say a few words here. I already prepped him, so he's been patient.
I know. He's still awake over there.
Several volunteers. As we've talked before, there are several second read policies. Mm-hmm. As there's a laundry list of things in that second section, including handbook updates, as well as easement that is across the high school property out to Amory Mill Road, and then overnight trips, including golf and the sixth grade camp. So there's kind of a mismatch of things. All made several changes in the handbook and have those updated as well.
Okay. Any questions of Diane or comments about the superintendent items?
Where are we in terms of staffing for
next year? We're in great shape. Just had an interview today, and they were making an offer this afternoon, and I think that gets us down to less than 4 positions across the district. All of them are in progress.
Good.
Today's was actually a new person we hired whose husband had a transfer, and so we had to hire someone to replace the new hire.
Okay,
that
right.
In the spring.
Yes, yeah.
So.
Okay.
You say the policies here are all changes based on law and OSPA recommendations.
And some from our great, some from the, like the presentation that Ashley gave is about mastery learning.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
some of those.
It's in line, as I mentioned.
Right.
I wanted to comment about the policies from different schools. The mastery learning is included in all of them, and, at least 3-8. And then also there's additional verbiage regarding bullying.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's very important. It's a social issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a school district issue. It's a social issue. But I appreciate seeing that kind of trying to be tightened up. And then I'm really happy about the cell phone policy for Creekview. So no cell phones in the classroom unless permission from a teacher for special use. So I think that cell phones in the classroom are a huge distraction, especially at younger ages. And I'm just really happy to see that type of policy within our district.
And it's kind of interesting because every building has kind of a unique take on that, but it's kind of like I kind of compare it to the state legislature. You know, it's like it's really up to the teachers. Because the reality is our students, we're one-to-one, so they have Chromebooks, they have access to a lot of those things anyway, so I don't know. I think it's important to let teachers kind of drive that instruction in the classroom and share their expectations of the students and oversee them, so, but yeah. The other thing I just wanted to point out, and I think I had asked Todd about it last one, but the policy DH, which is based on a House bill that passed in 2018 that gives the board an option to either purchase a surety bond or employee dishonesty and faithfulness duty policy. In the past, you could only bond your treasurers or employees that had access to funds. But now we have the choice between that surety bond or like an insurance policy, and So I know I'd asked Todd about it last month, and he said that because it's kind of new, the insurance companies are still working some things out. So it's just something to keep in mind. Once we have some comparisons, we can look and see if there's any kind of cost savings, as long as it's not an increase to the risk to the district. So other than that, any other questions or comments? Okay, roll call.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine.
Yes. With that, the motion carries, and
I'd
like to welcome Mr. Day. Yes. I'll
look honored, humble, and you, Board of Education, that I am making to the search committee to offer me this opportunity to become the new leader of the Marysville Athletic Department. For me, from a personal perspective, I'm a very relationship-oriented person, and I think that athletics is a platform that you can impact so many different individuals, from our student athletes to our school district and our community. So I'm excited about the foundation that's been built by Ryan and those that have come before him, and the exciting things that are coming in the future. And I'm going to continue to raise the bar. And something that I always stress with coaches that I've been involved with is to be the benchmark. So I want to continue to bring that here to Marysville, and hopefully we can continue to raise it up to another level.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome. All right. With that, we are to the comments and questions. Mr. Smith.
I'd like to thank my soldiers of instruction, my husband's, and really enjoyed the presentation. Very, very nice work. Liked the presentation after that's going to be interesting when the parents get the report card for the first time. It will be interesting to see what the response is. I want to point out an article in the Journal Tribune about a gymnastics coach being hired by the Ohio High School Athletic Association. And also, it's been fun to follow the Daily Digital article on the camp convention taking over Creekview. Very, very nice. So we've got lots of things going on in the district, lots of good news, and it's nice to see that in the meeting. Appreciate it very much.
Just thank you for hosting us. We really appreciate it. And maybe overstayed our welcome slightly.
Thanks to the presenters and the hosts, and also our public participants, and I'm sorry about the rain. I don't know any rain dances. Who was it?
Anti-rain
dance.
I'll do some research. Unfortunately, I have to miss the next month's meeting because I'll be on vacation in a very distant part of the world. So if you try to call me during the meeting, my phone will not work.
All right.
But I hope you have a good, productive meeting.
Should we add an agenda item for you to give us an update on your travels? Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I trust the district will be in good hands.
I think so.
In the summer.
Okay.
Nothing to add?
Nothing? Okay. Well, thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Heidi. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you for our participants. Also, I just want to do a shout out because our last meeting was right before graduation, right? I think it was. So I know you had commented about how much time and effort Vera Spencer had put into coordinating this first ever off-site graduation, and really wanted to shout out to all of the staffs at our high schools, the students who participated in the graduation. I thought it was just a really, really nice ceremony, and it's always exciting to see another class of Monarchs getting their diplomas. Also wanted to point out in some of the building notes some of the great things happening in the district, because, everyone always says, oh, teachers have this great schedule. Their summers are off. Well, we have summer reading programs going on. We have teachers delivering books to students' homes. We have some backpacks that one building said, when we have those blessings in the backpack, where it sends a backpack home with students who might need some extra food over the weekend, they wanted to continue that through the summer, so they collected money on their own, some businesses supported, but they're delivering those backpacks. I know our fifth graders did some community cleanup volunteer service, I think before the end of the school year, but there's just there was a lot of celebrating going on last month, and now there's just so much exciting planning going on for next year. I just can't wait to see what's going to happen.
We still have our summer lunch program, too.
Oh, yeah, the summer lunch program with the library.
Yeah.
Great partnership with the library. Well, on a sad note, I did want to point out, you had shared with us that we did lose a 2017 graduate, Mark Gerrell, and so our thoughts and prayers are with his family. And then to end on a happy note, I really wanted to thank our superintendent and treasurer. The last 2 months, we've done our year-end evaluations. We just can't say enough about how proud we are to have you leading our district, the great things that are happening here. So, job well done. Thank you very much. And with that, I would accept a motion to adjourn. Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes.